The lights won't chase away the darkness you left behind, but I put them up and try anyway. The present I'm unwrapping won't make me smile knowing you're not here on Christmas Day. The songs we sang together won't bring you near, for they're not sung in the way you used to do. There's a world so very full of Yuletide cheer, but that world is not the same without you. There's a log in the fire burning merrily along, but the wine in my hand has no taste. There's a tree twinkling fiercely with such festive joy, but I fear all this joy will go to waste. There's a space at my table that's set for you. There's a joke you always told, which waits in vain. There's a hole in my heart, which never seems to mend. But nonetheless, when I toast, I'll toast your name. Welcome to episode 7 of the Calm Christmas Podcast. My name is Beth Kempton, and this episode is called In the Bleak Midwinter, Pausing, Honouring and Remembering. That beautiful poem was Christmas Day by Donna Ashworth from her gorgeous book Loss, Poems to Better Weather the Many Waves of Grief, a book that has never been far from my side for much of this year. I was moved to dedicate a whole episode to those we love and miss, to encourage us all, me included, to take all the time we need to feel all the things we're going to feel in the days ahead. I hope you find this episode a real comfort, but of course it might also bring up some of those feelings for you here and now today, and that is totally okay. You might want to listen at a time that you can relax and won't be interrupted, maybe in a hot bath or out on a walk perhaps. It's also totally okay, of course, to pause at any time if it gets too much and maybe come back later. If you find you have to do that, I encourage you to take out a notebook and write down whatever wants to spill out, or have a chat with someone, or make a cup of tea and take some deep breaths. Perhaps head outside for a while. As you know, there's no right way to do this. In March this year, my lovely mum was diagnosed with terminal cancer out of the blue and died in a hospice 3 weeks later. I was by her side for nearly all of that time. It was devastating in its brevity and impact, but it was also just about enough time for us to leave nothing unsaid. We talked about Christmas, and she gave me some ideas for this season of the podcast, particularly for this episode. When I think about that now, I am floored by her bravery and selflessness, and the way that in having those conversations, she's managed to give us a Christmas gift this year too. One of the things we talked about was how Christmas is a constant marker in our lives, tracking the aging process, bringing different joys and challenges each time round. It reminded me of one particular Christmas lunch when I was a teenager. It's at Christmas time that I most notice the changing shape of things. We're gathered for Christmas lunch. My grandma is in her favourite over-the-knee tweed skirt and the high-necked powder blue blouse she saves for best. She's not really with it these days, pottering in the margins of dementia. But she's here today. She moved in next door a few years back when it got too much to live in a big old house up north all by herself. When she came here, she told everyone her name was Mary, even though it was actually Morag. She thought it would be easier to remember, but I couldn't help wondering if she'd left a little of herself in her old house on Manor Way. Mary Morag laughs easily through her confusion, limply pulls a cracker, and looks excited about lunch. My mother is in the kitchen, hands in fat oven gloves, holding a tray of roast potatoes, crispy on the outside, fluffy as dreams in the middle. Cheeks pink from the heat, all the pride, she's glad her brood isn't bickering today. On the one day of the year we're allowed to eat anything we want, all we want is Christmas dinner. Dad carves. I stand at the stone dividing wall between the kitchen and the dining space, ready to deliver steaming promise to the table, which is laid carefully with a green cloth and candles. I pause for a moment and take in the scene. My beloved grandma snuffling under her party hat as the sherry takes effect. She won't be in that chair for many more dinners, and I wonder what she's thinking. My brothers act cool, but they're not too cool for Christmas. Soon we'll have our heads in exams, then be off to uni and into our own lives, with boyfriends and girlfriends and spouses and children of our own. I watch Mum and Dad laughing about something, blurred at the edges by the cloud of steam from the turkey, and think that they won't always be this young. I wonder if they feel the shifting shape of the family too. My mum reminded me that it's important for us to recognise both our blessings and all the things we feel are missing at this time of year. Many of us are grappling with physical losses, and many are grappling with the loss of people they love who are physically still here, but through ageing or illness don't have the same capacity to participate as they might have once had. There's also grief for the kinds of Christmases we wanted which we don't have for all kinds of reasons. If any of these is familiar, or if someone you know is suffering in this way, then this episode is for you. I'm not going to tell you how to be or what to do as you face Christmas without a loved one this year, or if you face it carrying any other sense of grief. I have no idea, although I'm pretty sure there isn't a right way to be or a right thing to do. This is my first Christmas without my mother. We're all facing this together. What I am going to do is share some ideas for pausing, honouring and remembering our loved ones, along with some gentle advice from people who work with bereaved families and some beautiful poems and readings, which I hope will offer us some comfort. If you're listening soon after this episode has gone live, I've opened up a space on my Instagram account, at Beth Kempton, for you to leave a tribute to those you love and miss this year. Please do come and share a name, a memory, or a few words about them, so we can all hold them and you in our thoughts this Christmas time. It's easy to find the post because it's related to this week's giveaway. I'm offering a lovely bundle of goodies to support you in finding a quiet moment to pause, reflect and honour those you love and miss, including a beautiful candle from Cornish candle maker Centivale Candles, some dark moon tea from Tarn and Moon, a personalised signed copy of my book Calm Christmas and a Happy New Year, and a free place on my writing course Words Heal. To enter, just go to Instagram at Beth Kempton, find the giveaway post in my feed, and leave a comment about whoever you want us to hold in our thoughts this year. So today we're talking about pausing, honouring, and remembering. First of all, pausing. This is about taking time away from the festive noise and chaos to simply pause and to be with all our thoughts and feelings about who and what is absent and who and what is present. Let's do this together right now. Go and find a candle and something to light it with and a notebook and pen and meet me back here. And please take care with the fire. If you're listening while you're out on a walk, you can imagine me lighting the candle for you, but you might want to find a quiet place to sit, maybe lean against a tree or by a river or on a park bench. I'm going to guide you through a gentle meditation with some periods of silence. It doesn't matter if you have never meditated before. I'll let you know what to do. It's so easy. You cannot get it wrong. And at the end of the meditation, I will read you a few words. These are from veteran yoga teacher Judith Hanson Lassiter. These actually came through in one of her newsletters quite a long time ago now, but I saved them because I loved them. And I really encourage anyone to subscribe to her newsletter because it's really lovely. So, find a space where you won't be disturbed. Place your candle about 20 inches away from you. Sit tall and take a moment to center yourself. Put your dominant hand on your heart and take a few deep breaths in through the nose and out through the nose. Gently slow your breathing down and focus on the heat between your hand and your heart. Stay there for a few more breaths. And now, when you're ready, open your eyes and light your candle. Then come back to your seated position, cross your hands over your heart and watch the candle. Keep breathing naturally and steadily and watch how the light dances and flickers. Maybe see how many colours you can see in the flame. Keep your gaze nice and steady. If your mind wanders, just bring it back to the flame. I'm going to give you a minute just to gaze at that flame. Now imagine that the light of the flame is alive in the space beneath your hands. Now, keeping your hands crossed over your heart space, imagine that the light of the flame is alive in the space beneath your hands. The candle flame is a symbol of the love you carry, all the love you've received, and all the love you have to give. Keep watching the flame, feeling the heat beneath your hands, and sensing all that love you carry within you. Allow yourself to bring your loved one to mind. Imagine the light in your heart reaching out through time and space to wherever you believe them to be. Keep breathing, keep your hands on your heart, keep watching the flame, and feel the connection between you. I hope that in the midst of these turbulent times and the hustle and bustle of the year's end rituals and activities, we will find the courage to step into the space of silence. That state is the only place where we can listen and absorb the wisdom that permeates us and the world at every minute. I know it can sometimes bring unexpected emptiness and loneliness. If you experience any of these feelings, know that they are always only ever invitations back to the heart. If you have loved and lost and are missing significant others, may it lead you back to the heart. If you feel empty or lonely, may it lead you back to the heart. May we soften to that which has hardened us this year. May we soften. May we soften. May we soften. As you're ready, slowly bring your awareness back to the room, knowing that you can return to this meditation and your connection anytime you like. If you like, pause the audio and write a few words in your journal. Spill whatever wants to be written. Please remember to blow out your candle when you're ready. There are, of course, many other ways to create a pause. It might look like a long walk or staring at the waves at the shore, journaling by the Christmas tree, lying in shavasana on your yoga mat. I often put my right hand over my heart and just breathe deeply. Somehow this never fails to bring a moment of peace and help me feel more connected to whatever is bubbling up. Of course, do what feels good to you. If you want to cry, cry. According to Joanne Mallon, author of How to Find Calm in 5 Minutes, if you feel tears welling up, don't hold back. Crying releases stress and emotional pain. You'll feel calmer after crying for very simple biological reasons. Researchers have established that crying releases oxytocin and endogenous opioids, also known as endorphins. These feel-good chemicals help ease both physical and emotional pain. Tears are a stress reliever, with studies finding that over 50% of people reported an improved mood after crying. There's a famous quote attributed to Isaac Dinesen, the pen name of Danish author Karen Blixen, which goes, "The cure for anything is salt water, tears, sweat, the sea." I'm not sure it's a cure, but it certainly helps. Sometimes I write poetry, and that helps. Here's one I wrote for my tiny autumn poem 10-minute poetry challenge back in November. The one-word prompt was firewood. The old Zen master cautioned that it is not wood before and ash after. It is just wood residing in the Dharma position of wood and ash just being ash. But try as I might to understand him, I couldn't help wishing I had the power to turn the ash back to wood, undo the year. Bring her back. If you would like to try some poetry but you don't know where to start, you could try some wintry haiku. I recently wrote an essay about my love affair with haiku, which you can read for free at bethkempton.substack.com or via the link in the show notes. It includes seasonal words to inspire you and some tips on how to write your own haiku. I also shared lots of ideas for retreating in episode 2 earlier in this season of the podcast, so please do go back and have a listen if you missed that one. And so to honouring, which is about honouring those we miss in our own particular way. You know, sometimes when you write books, you have the strange experience of looking back to them for advice, the books that you wrote, and you often find the exact advice that you need right now in the pages that you yourself wrote years ago, as if your heart knew something years before your head really took it in. I often find that the advice I need today is just waiting for me in books that I wrote last year or several years ago. This is exactly what happened when it came to thinking about how I would like to honour my mum this Christmas. I turned to my book Calm Christmas and a Happy New Year and reminded myself about what I call the 5 stories of Christmas. To give you a bit of background, when I was researching Calm Christmas, I became curious about which symbols of Christmas are universal, as I thought they might give us something to rally around. I reached out to the hive mind of my online community and received hundreds of enthusiastic responses from all over the world, but I was surprised to learn from the many thousands of original data points that not one single element of the stereotypical Christmas is invariably applicable. Not everyone puts up a Christmas tree, or sings carols, or hopes for snow, or cooks a turkey, or exchanges gifts, or gathers with others to celebrate. Nevertheless, it was clear that there is a pool of experiences from which we all seem to draw at least one memory that is closely associated with the season, often related to our senses. The sights, sounds, smells, tastes and textures of Christmas's past linger in our hearts and inform our ideas of what Christmas should be in the future. In the course of my research, I also discovered that the roots of our traditions are deeply buried in legend and lore, and that it's extremely hard to unearth accurate facts about the origins of Christmas. The history of this most famous festival is littered with so many contradictions, assumptions, and unverifiable assertions that getting to the truth of it all is challenging. In speaking to people from all walks of life, of all ages and backgrounds, I discovered one salient truth. Every Christmas is unique, like a snowflake. Everyone is a carefully constructed, complex narrative that has formed as Christmas has whirled across time and geography, down family lineages, through television and social media feeds, and around our kitchen tables. No two are ever the same, either from year to year or from person to person. We need to slow down and get up close to see the complex and particular beauty of each one. Reaching out to my online community for their thoughts on Christmas whipped up a veritable snowstorm of memories and beliefs. But when the flakes finally started to settle, a pattern emerged. All of the respondents seemed to value and identify with at least one of five essential stories of Christmas. These are tales of faith, magic, connection, abundance, and heritage that have been told and retold for generations. Our personal connection to each of them offers a snapshot of what Christmas means to each of us at a particular moment in our lives. They provide clues to the triggers for our stress and the sources of our joy. They offer a framework for understanding our individual, deep-rooted views of Christmas and discerning what to hold on to and what to release. And what I've recently realised is that not only does viewing Christmas through the lens of these five stories increase our understanding of each other, which can have a monumental positive impact on our shared experience of the holidays, it is also a wonderful way to figure out how best to honour those we love and miss. You can find a full explanation of the five stories of Christmas and how to use them in my book Calm Christmas, but let me share enough to get you thinking today. Take out your notebook and think about the person that you want to honour this year. And as I reference each of the five stories, rate on a scale of 0 to 10 how important that story was to your person. In no particular order, the first story is the story of faith, the biblical story of Christmas. Rate that on a scale of 0 to 10 for how important that story was to your person. The second story is the story of magic. It's the story of Father Christmas, or whatever name you know him by. It's the story of flying reindeer and a toy workshop full of elves. How important was that? And thirdly, the story of connection. This is the Charles Dickens Victorian version, where people gather and share food and time around a Christmas tree or around the table. The fourth story is the story of abundance, the story of sharing our good fortune with others. In many ways, this is the commercial side of Christmas, but it can also be a story of generosity. And the fifth story is the story of heritage. This is your family's heirloom version of Christmas, the one that's been handed down to you, perhaps blended with the heirloom versions of other people as your family trees have combined. It's a carefully strained composite of all the geographical, ethnic, and cultural influences that you've received, grown up with, or adopted over the course of many years, the inherited treasures and quirky traditions that you link directly to your family and your childhood. See which of the five stories came out top when you thought about your person. It might be that two of them stood out. It might be that there is a runaway winner. Use those stories as your guiding light to decide how to honour your person this year. For example, in my mum's case, the story of faith mattered. She wasn't very religious, but she loved the biblical story of Christmas. Nativities, cow services, and all of that. She was a primary school teacher, and I'm sure that it was associated with having to do all of the festivities that encompass the story of faith every year, over and over, throughout her life. She always listened to carols from Kings on BBC Radio on Christmas Eve while prepping the vegetables. And one of my favourite ever memories is the two of us going to a candlelit carol service inside a cave called Peak Cavern in the Hope Valley. So one of the ways I'm going to honour her this year is to go to a candlelit carol service with my children and then go to one alone so I can cry into my hymn sheet without bothering anyone. For someone who loved the story of magic, you might decide to make secret parcel deliveries to people who are alone this year. For someone who loved the story of connection, you might reread A Christmas Carol and then make a real effort to bring together all the people who also miss your person this year. You get the idea. Have a think about which story of Christmas might have been most important to your person and make a plan to honour them in that way. I also want to share something I saw on the Option B Instagram account. At Option B on Instagram is a wonderful account founded by Sheryl Sandberg to help us all deal with grief and hardship. On it, singer Andy Grammer, who is at Andy Grammer, G-R-A-M-M-E-R, on Instagram, talked about actively remembering his mother by spreading her love even when she isn't here to do it herself. He felt that the best way to honour her was to carry on her legacy of generosity. Anytime the feelings bubble up, he takes it as a cue to go and do something for someone else. That might look like paying for a coffee for a person behind him in the queue, carrying someone shopping, letting someone else take the one parking space on the high street, striking up a friendly conversation with a stranger, anything. Anything that sends out a ripple of kindness, just as his mother has always done in the way she lived. I think this is such a wonderful idea to honour those we miss in a way that connects us with other people, as well as connecting us with the way that they lived. And so to remembering. This is about having conversations about the people that we love and miss with other people, allowing our collective remembering to bring their presence into our homes and hearts as we head into the holiday season. Perhaps doing something collectively to mark the absence and the presence of their memory when you're together. I thought I'd share a few things that we're doing in my house this year. I've made some baubles with photos of my mum with each of the grandchildren to go on our tree and the trees in the homes of my family. And we've had a memorial bench installed in my mum's favourite park, so me and my brothers and my dad are going to go there just before Christmas and decorate it with solar-powered fairy lights. We're going to take mulled wine in a flask and a tin of mince pies and be with her memory for a while, and then all go for lunch together. We know the fairy lights will get nicked. It's inevitable in the place where the bench is situated. But perhaps just for a few days, the twinkling lights will send out a warm glow to dog walkers, cyclists, and others thinking about those they miss at this time of year. On Christmas Eve, I intend to light a candle for my mum and just spend some quiet time thinking about her when the children have gone to bed. If the mood's right, I might do it before they go to bed and invite them to join me. We'll see. This is actually something I do anyway, every Christmas Eve. I light a candle and think about people, but my thoughts will especially be with her this year. Anglo-Saxon pagans celebrated the 24th of December as Modranicht, Night of the Mothers, which has resonated with me since being on the threshold of motherhood on Christmas Eve a few years ago. And so ever since, that has become my Christmas Eve ritual. Prior to a quiet dinner with Mr. K, I cuddle my daughters as they dream and remember the storm which announced the arrival of our firstborn. Then I light a candle and give thanks to my own mother and the women before her, to the gift of motherhood and to everyone who is offering a mothering influence to anyone else in whatever capacity that may be. It's a lovely moment to reflect on your relationships with matriarchal figures and to honour the nurturing instincts that have helped you prepare for this festive season. It's also the perfect time to breathe in the calm that seems to settle around twilight on Christmas Eve. There's always dancing in our house on Christmas Day, and I hope this year is no different. I will be sure to put on the music that encourages my mum's favourite ridiculous dance so we can all get involved. At Christmas dinner, I'm going to set a place for her with her photo on the table Some people might think this is strange or upsetting, but I have that photo next to my writing desk all the time anyway, so we're all used to it. I know this will encourage my children to talk about her in a natural way. A friend of mine has toasted absent friends one at a time over Christmas dinner every year for as long as I can remember. She has a lot of friends. It takes her quite a lot of time. We're going to adopt this tradition from now on too. Feel free to do the same if you fancy it. I'm also going to make my mum's famous Christmas trifle this year. I shared the recipe for that in episode 6 last week. Why not take a moment this week to think of a few ways that you could encourage conversations about those you love and miss? Also, let's remember that Christmas may not be the happy Christmas or the normal Christmas that we might be used to, but there will be joy hiding somewhere. As you probably know, grief can have a strange effect on the passage of time. A loss may leave you feeling stuck, unable to move forward, but in other ways, life keeps trundling along. It's just the strangest thing. Sometimes everyday distractions take over. Other times, the grief whips you back to the moment when everything changed. And everything gets even more complicated as nostalgia builds with the approach of Christmas. I've been feeling that. I wonder about you. You may feel simultaneously sad and joyous, present in the moment and lost in the past. The numinosity of Christmas can blur all sense of time completely, stir up reflections and heighten our emotions. It can be both a challenging and a precious time. The truth is, we will all experience an empty chair at the table someday. Eventually, that empty chair will be ours. Christmas can be an opportunity to pause and acknowledge that fact, to give thanks and to remember. I love this tiny poem, When the Times Darken, by Bertolt Brecht in Tomorrow is Beautiful, edited by Sarah Crossan. In the dark times, will there be singing? There will be singing of the dark times. Also, let's remember, we are not alone. Let's allow our own experiences and knowledge of sadness and loss to lead us towards kindness and compassion towards others. Perhaps we want to take extra care thinking about those in the sphere of suffering, everyone we know who is touched by the person we love and miss, knowing that they need to do Christmas their own way, which might not be our way. My dad has chosen not to put up decorations this year. I was all ready to take my children to go to the forest with him to get a tree, but he doesn't want to do that. So we're putting our energy into making our own home extra sparkly this year, knowing it will look beautiful when he arrives to join us on Christmas Day. The same goes for us. We have just as much right to opt out of things or opt into things as anyone else. Christmas is already going to be different to usual. We can choose to make it more normal, more like the way it has always been, if that brings us comfort, or we can choose to do something different if that brings us comfort instead. And let's let our own experience prompt us to take extra care with strangers too, to be kind to people dining alone, smiling gently at the person in the cafe cradling a coffee, staring into space, knowing what that feels like. One of our lovely listeners, Louise Heaps, who is at The Word Kitchen on Instagram, reached out to me to say that she works with the bereavement team at St Oswald's Hospice, based in Newcastle upon Tyne in the northeast of England. And would we like some advice for this episode? Of course, I said, yes, please. Here are some words from Brenda Clayton, the bereavement support coordinator at the hospice. Their bereavement team offers a range of support services to individuals and families on a one-to-one basis and in groups. They hold a regular bereavement cafe, memory days, and an annual Light Up a Life event, which gives families the opportunity to remember their loved ones by dedicating a light on their special Christmas tree, which I think is just a gorgeous idea. Brenda has worked with many bereaved individuals and families over the years. She understands how difficult the festive period can be for people who are grieving. This is what she has to say to us. Christmas is a difficult time for any bereaved family, but particularly those facing their first Christmas without a loved one. Often the build-up to the day is more stressful than the day itself. The anticipatory grief can start weeks or even months in advance. This is me speaking now. I should add that you may have been feeling this, perhaps without even realising it, these past few weeks. It may have taken a toll on your well-being, so it's really important to be aware of this and to be gentle with yourself, okay? Brenda said, Your family may have special traditions that are very personal to you, built over many years. Some of these traditions may no longer be possible without your loved one. This can result in you feeling a huge void around this time of year. It's important to recognise that life has changed and that you may need to live your life in a different way. Create new traditions that work with your new life. This is not about forgetting your loved one. It's simply a way of adapting to your new situation. Make sure any new traditions work for you. Don't put too much pressure on yourself to create the perfect Christmas for everyone else. Find out what works for you. This isn't selfish. It's a way of coping with the grief and the complex emotions that come with that. She added, I worked with a client recently who was experiencing a lot of anxiety about Christmas. I asked them what they wanted to do. She answered she wanted to spend the day with her children eating pizza and ice cream, sitting on the floor. And that's exactly what they did, and they had a lovely day as a result. It might not have been traditional, but it worked for them. There may be periods of sadness and tears at Christmas. That's completely understandable. These are your feelings and this is your grief. But create a day that is as stress-free as possible. It's not about doing what others expect you to do. It's about creating a day that's right for you. If you're struggling with grief, contact your local hospice to ask what bereavement support services they could offer. Remember, grief is unique to everyone, but you are not alone. Thank you, Brenda, so much. In the show notes, I've included a list of places that you can turn to for support if things get too much for you this holiday season or any time, as well as a link to Brenda's hospice, St Oswald's, in case you want to make your own donation. To be honest, I can't believe I went through more than 4 decades of my life with absolutely no appreciation of the incredible job that hospices do until the moment my mother needed one, and it was there for her. And they let us stay with her night and day for the last few precious days that we had together. So if you have any spare cash this holiday, please consider donating something to the hospice wherever you live, or having a clear out ahead of Father Christmas arriving, donating clothes and toys to our local hospice charity shop. Right, before we move on to our writing exercise for this week, let's drink in a few beautiful lines of poetry. If you're in need of a poetry book at this time, I highly recommend any of the anthologies that these poems come from. Some of them are really arresting poems, but there's something in reading others say what they really feel and sensing them stare their feelings in the face that gives us permission to do the same. As always, you can find links to all of these books in the show notes. So the first poem is The End of a Season by Dana Goya in Soul Food, Nourishing Poems for Starved Minds, edited by Neil Astley and Pamela Robertson Pierce. And you might just want to listen to these poems and then let them wash over you and wash away. You might want to let them sink in. You might want to get out your notebook and pause after the poem and write some words of your own. It's totally up to you. So, The End of a Season. I wanted to tell you how I walked tonight down the hillside to the lake after the storm had blown away, and say how everything suddenly seemed so clear against the sparkling, rain-soaked streets, cold and bright as starlight. I wanted to wake you up despite the hour and drag you out into the dark, crisp air to feel the end of winter, the cold we cursed so long slipping away and suddenly so precious now that it was leaving. But there's no one to come back to now, only the night, its wind and rain, the chill magnificence of its borrowed light, the touch of this impossible season. This is Vigil by Phyllis Levin, found in The Art of Losing, Poems of Grief and Healing, edited by Kevin Young. Why not wake at dawn? Why not break from the coffin of night, whose nails are the only stars left? Why not follow a tear like a comet's tail, and trail the grief of a year until it ends, who knows where? Why not wake at dawn, after all is gone, and go on? And our third of the 6 poems I want to share with you today is called Remember the Time by Ashley Miller, and you can find this in Like Frost on the Winter Garden, edited by Austie M. Baird. I tiptoe over black ice, black ice, black ice that reminds me of you. In fact, Everything reminds me of you. And then we have an untitled poem by Sherry Arnett in She Was the Storm by Sherry Arnett. You will get through this, just as you have gotten through every struggle that came before. And then a very short poem found in the Poetry Pharmacy Forever, edited by William C. Cart. It's called Today My Horoscope Read by Walsan Shire. You are the alchemist of your loneliness. You can create anything in its place. And now we have Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost in Vintage Frost, the Collected Poems. If that wasn't a poet destined to write about winter, I don't know. Robert Frost. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Of course, some of the most beautiful lyrics out there are also just like poetry. I did recommend some festive music or winter music earlier in the season, but today I can't not mention Winter Song again. It is the name of an album by Sarah McLachlan, and on it there is a song called Winter Song, just the most gorgeous song written and sung by Sarah McLachlan in honour of her mother. Do go and have a listen, if you can find it. And so before I invite you to write, I have just a few words for you from a lovely book called Evergreen, Discovering Joy in Every Season by Lydia Millen. Find solace in the knowledge that while life won't ever feel exactly as it did before you experienced loss, it doesn't mean that life won't feel joyful again. Grief and joy can coexist, and colour will return to the space that was once filled by whoever you have been lucky enough to love. And so your writing exercise today is to write a letter to the person you love and miss. Tell them all that you are doing to make Christmas special this year. Tell them whatever you want to say. And if you fancy doing something with your hands, doing some craft this week, why not decorate a box to honour your person, put lots of memories inside? You could keep it for yourself or you could give it to someone else for Christmas. I'm sure it would be a very, very precious gift. Also, one of the things that my mum loved was the smell of Christmas, which I think to her meant a mixture of many things. But of course, there are things like citrus and evergreens and those kinds of scents in that idea of the scent of Christmas. I found a lovely recommendation in the Almanac 2023 by Leah Leendertz, and it was to make your own Christmas home spray. And she says, fill a spray bottle with water, 1 teaspoon of vodka and 25 to 30 drops of Christmassy essential oils, then shake it up and spritz it around. Try frankincense, sweet orange, on Douglas fir. You could also try mandarin, cinnamon, clove, perhaps, whatever you like. Bring that scent of Christmas to your home, especially if you don't have a real tree in your home this year. And now it's time for our Christmas traditions. I know that you're going to be thinking a lot about your own family's Christmas traditions this week, so I'm not going to bombard you with a lot, but I do have a couple here that I'd like to share really to do with the timing. We obviously have winter solstice coming up. So first of all, at Karen of KMX2, that's her handle on Instagram. On the solstice, we gather in the evening with friends on a nearby trail that runs along the river. We walk into a clearing using candles in jars that we've decorated. At the clearing, we build a small fire in a tinfoil roasting pan. The children decorate the nearby trees with treats that they've made for the animals and birds. Corn cobs, sliced apples on a string, cranberry and popcorn garlands, birdseed and peanut butter pine cones and things like that. All amazing ideas. Once the trees are decorated, we gather by the fire. When they were little, I would read the children the story Sunbread by Elisa Cleven, and we would bring out the sparklers, lots of sparklers, and encourage the sun to come back. Then we'd pack up and walk back out, singing We Wish You a Merry Solstice and other solstice versions of Christmas songs. And then Elizabeth Walter, who is at Walter Writer on Instagram, shared a memory of a favourite tradition. She said, Christmas carols inside the old castle walls. The keep was open to the elements above, but four ancient walls were around us. They sold tomato soups in styrofoam cups, and the Salvation Army band would play. I loved that so much as a child. I grew up in Porchester, in Hampshire, and I didn't appreciate that it was unique to have a castle in your village. I thought I'd share one of my traditions this year, another one inspired by my mum, who had more Christmas cards than you can even imagine. We used to have a competition to guess how many there were and then run around the house counting them all. And they were always in their hundreds, which is just, yeah, I do not send hundreds of Christmas cards, but it was just such a lovely decoration to have. And I used to love going around the strings of them to find my favourites and narrowing it down to the absolute best card of the year and then keeping that one for myself. Anyway, me and my children will be putting on Santa hats and delivering Christmas cards to our neighbours this year. We take a tin of mince pies and I try to encourage them to sing carols as we go, not to anyone in particular, just to ourselves, but I think they might be too cool for that this year. We'll see. And so for our nature corner, I just mentioned there, of course, Friday, December the 22nd at 3:27 a.m. is the winter solstice here in the Northern Hemisphere, which marks the return of the light. I have a feeling that this will be more poignant and potent than usual this year. What if we all got up for the sunrise? Sea swimming is popular where I live, although personally, I think I'm going to be happy with my cosy slippers, dressing gown, fairy lights, candle, hot cup of tea, and my notebook before my family wakes up, and then maybe an early walk. Whatever you choose to do, why not find a way to get out in nature today and also on the winter solstice? A winter picnic with candles, perhaps. That would be lovely. So coming up, we have the last posting date for second class letters and cards in the UK is Monday the 18th of December. And the last posting date for first class letters and cards in the UK is Wednesday the 20th of December. And Thursday the 21st of December is National Robin Day in the UK. Get ahead tips for this week. We're obviously getting closer to Christmas now. Breathe. Maybe wrap some presents. This far out from Christmas, you can probably still have a lovely, relaxed evening doing that before it becomes quite frantic if you leave it till the end. House cleaning, if you fancy. I always like to have a clean house before Christmas, and it seems a bit pointless when everything just, you know, gets trashed by stuff everywhere. But I like it. It feels good to know that we're approaching this lovely time of the year with a lovely clean house. So I will be setting aside some time for that this week. You might want to iron the tablecloth and make sure that you have everything you need for your Christmas table settings. You've still got time to get anything that might be missing. And I really encourage you to plan some quiet time between Christmas and New Year. It's fantastic to know that so many of you have signed up for my Winter Writing Sanctuary, which is free this year. It's a beautiful 10-day live writing class. Although you don't have to be there live every day, you can do it whenever you like. And it begins on December the 28th and it runs for 10 days across the new year. And if you happen to be away then or you can't do it then, you'll be able to access it for quite a while afterwards. So there's no rush at all. It is a proper writing class. I'm not doing a webinar to try and sell you anything or something like that. I've done this for several years now. I've had many thousands of people go through it. It's all new content for this year. It's going to be really gorgeous. It's a beautiful way to enter the new year together with writers from all around the world. You get access to a community of people who are interested in winter and in writing in the same way that you are. If you fancy it, please do bring your friends as well. You can book your free place at dowhatyouloveforlife.com or via the link in the show notes. Next week's episode is episode 8. Can you believe it? We're nearly there. It's called Christmas Time Is Here. And breathe, you've got this. It's going to be a short episode because it will drop just before Christmas Eve. I have enjoyed sharing this run up to Christmas with you so much that I really want to offer a special Christmas episode. It will be small but perfectly formed. I'll try and keep it to under 20 minutes, so perhaps you can plan to find a gap in your Christmas Eve schedule to fit that in. And then we have two more episodes in the week between Christmas and the New Year. We have one all about making the most of the hush, which is what I call that beautiful time that's like some kind of portal. And then the final episode of season 3 will land with you just before New Year's Eve. To finish up today, I want to offer you an oracle reading and a blessing. This is not religious or based on any particular belief. It's just me thinking of you at this time. So first of all, the oracle card. I used a new deck called the Healing Waters Oracle by Rebecca Campbell. It's stunning. I just love the colours. I love anything to do with water. And I asked the cards, what do we need to know right now as we think about those we love and miss, and all the other people in the world who are missing loved ones too? The card that called to me is the one called On Call. I don't know if I've pronounced that right, but it's spelled E-N, new word, C-A-U-L. And underneath the title on the card, it says Healer, Seer, Priestess, Soul Purpose. And this is what the card explanation says. The folklore of many different places, including Iceland, France, Holland, Albania, England, and Germany, has tales about a rare event called an on-call or a veiled birth. This occurs when the mother goes into labour, but her waters fail to break, and the baby appears in this world, still inside the amniotic sac in which it gestated. According to tradition, children born on call have second sight and gifts of healing. In Scotland, they were seen as good omens, and fishermen sought out birth call, the amniotic sac, as an amulet to protect them from drowning. In ancient Egypt, they were believed to be the future priests, priestesses, and priestesses of the community. This is the card of the healer, the seer, the wisdom keeper, and the mystic. Perhaps you're already on this path, or perhaps it's something new for you. The healer, the shaman, the medicine person knows that it's through facing their own shadow and taking their own deep healing journey that they can return to guide others in their healing. The healer is, like all of us, in their own spiral of transformation and healing. Healed isn't a stagnant state. The healer knows they're not meant to be perfect and whole all the time. Instead, it's because they've journeyed to the deepest, darkest, uncharted oceanic caves and returned with an open heart and mind that they're able to hold space for another. This card is an acknowledgement of your role in the world and the deep work you've been doing on your own healing journey. And then it says, Soul Inquiry. How can you answer the call of your soul in the fullest expression today? That's something you might want to journal about today. As always, the card is perfect. In her wonderful book, The Lives We Actually Have, 100 Blessings for Imperfect Days, Kate Bowler says, there is a beautiful and instructive language that we can use for naming that strange mix of awful and divine experiences in our lives. It's the language of blessing. We need a language of acknowledgement for the lives we have, not simply the lives we wish for. We need a spiritual account of time that is rich enough to name the breadth of our experience. I highly recommend Kate's book, as well as Benedictus, A Book of Blessings, by John O'Donohue. You might even want to write a blessing for yourself and your loved ones this year. In the meantime, here's one from me. A blessing for Christmas without a loved one. May you have whatever kind of Christmas you want and need this year. May your loved one be present in your mind and in your heart in whatever way you want them to be. May anything that went unsaid be as if it had been said. May anything that needs forgiving be forgiven. May anything that is complicated fall away, so you are left with the flickering light of an everlasting connection which reaches back through time, across space, between hearts. May the depth of your loss be evidence for the vastness of your love. May it help you see into the heart of being and remind you to celebrate wonder and stay aware that there is an imprint of your loved one on everything you do, if you want it to be there. May you honour those who have helped you through the darkness and recognise your own contribution to the world as the healer you are becoming. May you show compassion to yourself, to others who are suffering, whether or not you know their names. May you continue to be interested in both the remarkable and unremarkable which make this life, and see beauty in the ordinary every single day. May you have whatever kind of Christmas you want and need this year. You have been listening to the Calm Christmas Podcast with me, Beth Kempton, produced by Untapped Talent. Don't forget to subscribe and please tell your friends. And don't forget to give us a rating. 5-star would be nice. Helps other people discover the podcast. If you have enjoyed the show, you might just love my book, Calm Christmas and Happy New Year, A Little Book of Festive Joy, which is out now from all good booksellers. For a peek into my perfectly imperfect Christmas preparations, come and find me on Instagram at Beth Kempton or on Substack, which you can find at bethkempton.substack.com, where I also write about midlife, fearless writing, and my favourite ways to travel in Japan. Stay warm and cosy, my friend, and I'll see you next week.